I'm honored to be part of this illustrious panel with people whom I've always admired and considered teachers and mentors, and it's a privilege just to be here. I also want to thank my mom, supposed to be here, although I don't see her. And I hope she's not lost, but if you're out there, Mom, I just want to say thank you for your years of loving self-sacrifice, because without you, I wouldn't be doing any of the things that I'm doing now, and the same goes for my deceased father. So. Today I'm going to be talking about, today I'm going to be talking about the destructive public health, human rights, and environmental consequences of symbols of love. If you're interested in learning more about this, there's a much longer presentation that also includes floriculture that's available on the Public Health and Social Justice website. It's completely open access, meaning anyone can take and use for their own teaching purposes or self-education portions or the entire PowerPoint. So, we'll start with diamonds. Diamonds are created from carbon early in the Earth's history under extreme temperature and pressure. Diamonds are produced in a number of different countries. The leading producer is Botswana, then you've got Russia, Angola, Canada, working your way down. Most of the cutting is done in India, Tel Aviv, Antwerp, Mumbai, New York, and Thailand. And the major trading centers are in Antwerp, Tel Aviv, New York, and Mumbai. But the major retail markets are here in the United States as well as in Japan. And annual retail sales of diamonds in 2010 were $50 billion. These diamond mines are huge operations. This is the Kimberley mine in South Africa, which yielded 3 tons of diamonds and closed quite a while ago. And here to give you an even better sense of scale, this is the largest open diamond mine in the world. This is the Mirny mine in Siberia. Some of the photos that I'll show today are from Sebastio Salgado and others that I've admired. And this is probably the only shot in which you'll see a smiling worker. And this might be one of the winners in the casino economy, or at least someone who's hoping to strike it rich. Now, the folks who really put diamonds on the map, so to speak, were the De Beers Mining Company, which was founded by Cecil Rhodes in 1888, and today is responsible between 40 and 45% of worldwide diamond production and sales. And this is a quote from Rhodes, who, in addition, was the founder of the country of Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, and also responsible for Rhodes Scholarship. "We must find new lands from which we can easily obtain raw materials and at the same time exploit the cheap slave labor that is available from the natives of the colonies. The colonies would also provide a dumping ground for the surplus goods produced in our factories." So things have really not changed, whether you're talking about diamonds or other equipment. So the diamond engagement ring was first used back in the 15th century by Archduke Ferdinand, but in 1939, De Beers hired a PR company to make diamonds, quote, "a psychological necessity. The larger the diamond, the greater the expression of love." And within 3 years, 80% of engagements in this country were consecrated with diamond rings, and this is still true today. And it was just 5 years later that the slogan, "A diamond is forever," was born, and jewelers were instructed, and I would argue, instructed to tell or pressure men to spend at least 2 months' salary on the ring. In 1999, Advertising Age magazine declared the Diamond is Forever campaign and slogan the most effective advertising campaign of the 20th century. And ironically, in a moment of candid honesty, the chairman of De Beers that same year said, "Diamonds are intrinsically worthless, except for the deep psychological need that they fulfill." But in fact, they are not worthless, because there are 144 million carats of rough diamonds mined for jewelry each year, and a one-carat diamond will retail for anywhere from $400 to $7,500, and they cost less than $2 billion to extract, but ultimately sell for over $50 billion. Diamond mining, like gold mining, involves a casino economy where the vast majority of the miners are losers, and it's only a tiny, tiny fraction of a percent that end up being winners. There are currently a million individuals just in sub-Saharan Africa alone that are working in diamond mining under dangerous, unhealthy conditions for a pittance. The diamonds themselves are embedded in asbestos, so their workers are exposed to asbestos and the associated cancers that arise from that, mesotheliomas, et cetera. And the workers indeed do suffer from higher rates of cancer, leukemia, and silicosis. The ones who really make out well are, of course, the middlemen, the diamond dealers, the exporters, and then the CEOs and top management of these companies. These are mostly foreign nationals, and very little of the profit ends up being reinvested in the local communities. Mine owners also violate indigenous people's rights through the destruction of traditional homelands and forced resettlement, and mining hastens environmental degradation of ecosystems that are already under severe stress. So you can see how all of this is setting the conditions for conflict, terrorism, and war. And indeed, diamonds have been used by rebel armies in the DRC, Angola, Liberia, Zimbabwe, and Sierra Leone to pay for weapons used to fight these brutal wars that have resulted in 4 million deaths, have involved the widespread use of child soldiers, involved forced labor, sex slavery, dissemination of HIV, and in Sierra Leone, the Revolutionary United Front used axes and machetes to actually chop off people's hands as part of that war, and here's a particularly poignant example of a child who suffered during that conflict. Diamonds have also been reported, because they're small, they're easy to transmit, they hold a lot of value, to fund terrorist groups, including Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah. They're a good way to hide and to launder money. And in terms of conflict versus non-conflict diamonds, it depends on who you ask. The State Department says that 10 to 15% of worldwide diamond jewelry is conflict. Global Witness, which is one of the organizations doing the most work on this, says it's more like 20%. We'll talk a little bit in a moment about how to know if you're getting a diamond, if it's conflict-free or not, and what sort of international agreements are in place to try to prevent the dissemination of conflict by conflict diamonds. But now we're going to move on to gold. 80 to 90% of gold mined today is turned into jewelry, whereas 10 to 20% is used by industry. The top producers of gold are China, Australia, Peru, the U.S., Russia, South Africa, and there are 2,500 tons mined each year, which is valued at $21 billion. And the typical piece of gold jewelry will sell for at least four times the value of the actual gold itself. Aggressive marketing has played a significant role in the gold industry, also in popularizing the gold wedding band. And this is the myth of gold mining. It's an old prospector out panning in a river. And this is the reality from Salgado, and all those little dots you see are individuals climbing up and down under heavily military guard to mine the gold. And again, child laborers involved in gold mining also. So speaking of more broadly mining, mining is the world's deadliest industry, and there are 12 million adults and 1 million children who work worldwide as miners. Tens of thousands are killed mining gold and other minerals over the last century, and 40 are killed in mining accidents every day. And this is not just gold, this is mining in general, planet-wide. I briefly talked about the resource curse. Wherever countries have an enormous load of gold or diamonds or tantalum for cell phones or other rare precious earth minerals, what you see is a reversal of economic growth, increasing poverty, governmental corruption, with the benefit of the mining industries going to the central government and to overseas corporations, with little being returned to the local communities. And those who particularly suffer include rural and indigenous peoples. Today, three-quarters of active gold mining and exploration sites overlap with regions of high conservation value, such as national parks and World Heritage sites. And gold mining is also a very toxic field to be employed in. So there are at least 18 tons of mine waste created just to obtain the gold for a single 3-ounce, 18-karat gold wedding band. And the way this works is that huge amounts of water are involved, basically being blasted into the walls of the mine. The gold is then released, and it's leached from the ore using cyanide, and mercury is then used to capture the gold particles as an amalgam. This mercury is then converted to methylmercury, which works its way up the food chain into the top predator fish that we eat and gets into the bodies of pregnant women, and there are about 500,000 women of reproductive age in the United States who have toxic levels of mercury in their bloodstream. And gold mining itself contributes about a third of the mercury that we're exposed to planet-wide, the majority, of course, coming from coal-fired power plants. This is one of Eugene Smith's poignant photographs of Minamata disease, and there's an entire PowerPoint devoted to Smith and his photography on the website if you're interested. There's also environmental damage from gold mining, including contaminated groundwater, which often sits in large, toxic lakes that are held in place by very tenuous dams. And when the cyanide and the mercury are released, when these dams either collapse or slowly leach into aquifers, you see death of fish, other animals, and the water is poison for those who require the aquifer for sustenance. Gold smelting also uses large amounts of energy and releases sulfur dioxide and nitrogen oxide, which are components of acid rain, which can worsen asthma and skin ailments. And the toxic pollution from gold mines affects about 100 million people worldwide. And as a result of the tremendous amounts of water used, the water tables get sucked down, and women have to walk further, because it's women who do the walking, to get water. And now it's 6 to 7 miles per day on average is the distance that a woman has to walk in the developing world to get fresh potable water. In the interest of time, since we're running short, I'll briefly mention how gold mining harms women. There are just a few women employed in gold mining industry. Most are in low-level clerical positions where they're subject to discrimination and sexual harassment, firing for pregnancy, lack of health benefits. Mining also displaces agriculture, where women play a major role and thus removes them from the labor source, giving them less social, economic, and political power, and concentrates economic and political power more in the hands of men. There are also human rights abuses that have been associated with gold mining. For instance, in the world's largest mine, which is owned by a U.S.-based company, the operators have been implicated in forced evictions, murders, rape, torture, extrajudicial killings, and arbitrary detention with the aid and abetment of the Indonesian military, to which this company has paid millions of dollars in security contracts. Gold mining has also been linked to terrorism, particularly the Echo Bay mines, which paid off Abu Sayyaf, which is the branch of Al-Qaeda in the Philippines, in exchange for protection of its Philippine-based gold mine. And the mining industry gives a lot of money to Congress to sort of prevent us from getting involved in any treaties relevant to this. And you can see the largest recipient of money from the mining industry was, of course, Mitt Romney. So in the interest of time, since I am running short, I'll say that there are some solutions to this problem, and I'll flash ahead to the website so you can know where to go for more information. There's a No Dirty Gold campaign, which tries to hold jewelers accountable for selling dirty gold. Only a small number of jewelers, it's about a fifth of those in the United States, have actually signed on to this. They're trying to get more companies involved to avoid so-called conflict gold. And there's a thing called the Kimberley Scheme certification process, to which, surprisingly, the United States is a signatory, that has controls that are supposed to be in place to assure that diamonds are taken from region to region and that there is quality control so that no conflict diamonds make it to market. So other things that we can do, in addition to trying to get our government to more forcefully adhere to the Kimberley Scheme and to get companies to sign on to the No Dirty Gold campaign, would be things like shareholder activism, boycotts, consumer education. And I would like to go back to just the conclusions, if I can have 30 seconds. It's important to note that diamonds and gold are symbols of love that are just cultural constructs that are perpetuated in large part by the persuasive marketing efforts of large multinational corporations. And their production involves significant damage to communities, the environment, and harms men, women, and children. Human rights abuses, armed conflict, even terrorism, and that symbols of love should not be constant reminders on our fingers of death and destruction. So we should consider alternate symbols of love and work for social justice and change.